With sports car racing news and analysis from around the globe, this is the Double Stint Podcast. Here's John DeGeese and Ryan Marine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Double Stint, Sports Car 365 Sports Car Racing Podcast here in Indianapolis. I'm Ryan Marine. We've got John DeGeese in Chicago. Joining me once again, we've got some esports to recap with the IMSA iRacing Pro Series taking place once again this past week. We've also got some SRO e-racing offerings to get to, and we'll do that here in just a bit. Plus, plenty of news and some listener questions as well. Starting, though, with the IMSA iRacing Pro Series, John, it had been an all-BMW affair as far as winners were concerned, but that has changed now with Nick Tandy jumping to the top, picking up the win, and maybe showing a sign of things to come.
Yeah, Ryan, absolutely. It was a big win for Porsche last week in the iRacing Pro Series with Nick Tandy taking the victory, first victory of the year for Porsche in IMSA competition, no matter virtually or in reality. And I think this one was even sweeter given the dominance BMW had in the early season IMSA iRacing Pro Series races. Tandy had a really nice battle early on with Ian-Chan Gouven, his teammate, who's actually a Porsche junior driver that Porsche's drafted into the iRacing lineup for these races. He was driving a 913 factory Porsche. Nick was in the 911, and we actually had Earl Bamber and Lawrence Vanthor in the field as well, and other Porsches. Unfortunately, they didn't fare so well compared to the other two. But yeah, it looked like a pretty good Porsche affair following the round of first pit stops when we had the Ford GT of Rodrigo Fluker pit, ultimately losing more time in the pits, seemed to be a common occurrence with this car and driver. Unfortunately, in the last couple of races, he's shown a lot of speed, got the pole again for the race, but missed out on some time there in the pits and sort of gave the way to Tandy and Gouven to sort of control the race. And if it wasn't for a spinning Risi Ferrari of Joel Miller, I think it would have been a Porsche 1-2 in the race. Gouven got collected by Miller, I think, in turn 12 or turn 13, unfortunately, with an accident there. But Tandy ended up holding on for the win. And I'd have to say it was really exciting again. Another great race that IMSA put on. Some good battles, some good, you know, commentary from John Hindoff and company, and man, the graphics and simulation makes you feel like you're almost right there. And it was good to see a new manufacturer in Victory Lane and virtual Victory Lane, and also you know, some real life drivers like Nick sort of buckling down and really coming to grips with this sim platform.
And our new component to IMSA's esports platform was the new IMSA iRacing Challenge that utilizes the Porsche 718 Cayman GT4 as the lone car in that class, and it got underway with an event that preceded the iRacing Pro Series. Michael Cooper, driving for Flying Lizard Motorsports, whom he drives for over in the SRO America paddock, interestingly enough, picked up the win there, and that will have two more events on the schedule as it runs concurrent with the iRacing Pro Series moving forward. The SRO also busy with sim racing over the weekend, John. We had Brian Heidkotter, no surprise here, winning again in the SRO America GT Rivals Championship. He had to work for it, perhaps a bit more than any of his previous wins, but that's now, what, five on the season and four in a row for Brian Heidkotter in GT Rivals.
Yeah, impressive stuff for Brian yet again. He had some good competition in the form of a real-life sim racer, Josh Staffen, who had won in his only other previous outing earlier in the year. Unfortunately, Josh got involved in an incident, I think with about 20 minutes to go, took him out of the lead and put Brian out front. I think Brian was catching him anyway, and I think it was probably just a matter of time, but it would have made for a much closer battle, I think, had that incident not happened. But lots of craziness, you know, further in the back of the pack. I think battles for fifth, sixth, on through in the final couple laps. It made for some definite entertainment there for some of the real life drivers, for sure.
Definitely so. David Parrell ended up in second. John Miller ended up in third in that race. Meanwhile, earlier in the day, the SRO on the European side of things had their e-racing events, including one for pro drivers, and that was Ben Barnicot who picked up the win in that particular race. Did so in the McLaren, which was a bit of different diversity in terms of the winning manufacturer. So congratulations to Ben, and we'll be continuing to update you on the esports results as they come into us. There is more to be found, of course, in our weekly racing roundup as well. Some other series that had races over the weekend, you can find results there. But let's transition from the virtual to the real, John, because we've got plenty of news to touch on this week, starting with the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and calendar updates. We've talked about it in the past. There were a couple of events, Watkins Glen and CTMP, coming up that we thought might be in jeopardy for various reasons, and it does seem like changes have been made with the addition of two new races to the calendar at Daytona and Sebring this summer that effectively replaces the two that that were in question, with those being postponed perhaps to later in the season.
Yeah, Ryan, this has been something in the works for quite some time. I had first heard about this Daytona 4th of July race for about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I know that given like NASCAR's racing return strategy, I think like NASCAR, IMSA's trying to do it in a more controlled environment and a track they know very well, a track they have relations with, and in a more controlled environment. So they've decided to return to racing at Daytona on July 4th. It'll be a 2-day show for DPI, GTLM, and GTD cars. It's kind of cool as it rekindles the Paul Revere 250, which was a long-running a nighttime race during the Coke 400 weekend, Pepsi 400 weekend at Daytona with NASCAR. NASCAR is not in town that weekend. This is the first year, I think, in quite a few years that they're not actually racing 4th of July weekend at Daytona, and that was scheduled well before the coronavirus pandemic. So it'll be an IMSA show only, no Michelin Pilot Challenge, just the WeatherTech cars, and it'll be a 2-hour, 40-minute race. Then 2 weeks later, we'll be going to Sebring for DPI, LMP2, GTLM, and GTD, also in a 2-day show. GTD cars will just be part of the WeatherTech Sprint Cup there. So this event is another replacement round on the schedule, because what we had as a consequence of these two new races is that the race at CTMP has been canceled for this year due to logistics issues and I think the challenges of trying to get into Canada for all the teams and transporters and equipment. The race at Watkins Glen has been postponed until early October, October 1st to 4th, and we'll get back to that in a minute. And also the race at Lime Rock, which was to be held the same weekend as now the rescheduled Sebring race, that's going to happen at the end of October, October 30th to 31st. But of note, that'll still remain a GT-only event with GTLM and GTD. So IMSA now has 11 events on their schedule. CTMP is the only one that's basically been canceled lately, but we've also had the two cancellations of the street circuits at Belle Isle and at Long Beach. And I think that's how IMSA sort of reshuffled their calendar here, where it's, you know, I think it's making the best of every opportunity. They've seemed really bullish on getting back to racing as we have it planned right now. And I think this is kind of the first definitive schedule we've seen come out of IMSA or any other sanctioning body for that matter. We had a couple other announcements this last week as well, but it seems as though racing is sort of getting more definitive right now, even though we're going to be seeing things happening behind closed doors. Forgot to mention these two races that have been added, Daytona and Sebring, will be without spectators, limited personnel in attendance. IMSA is yet to provide details of all that, but it'll be based on NASCAR's protocols and how they've been handling things. They just had their first race back on Sunday at Darlington and seemed to go pretty well there with how things were handled from a safety perspective.
One of the challenges that faces IMSA, maybe more so than any other domestic series, is the international nature of the teams, the drivers, etc. And it's something we've talked about on the show before. I know you had a chance to speak with John Doonan about the efforts that IMSA is putting in place to work with government officials to try and ease the burden of entry for some of these international drivers, to be able to ensure that teams are able to compete with their full complement of drivers and staff.
Yeah, during the teleconference on Friday, John addressed this issue to the stakeholders in IMSA, and he said that IMSA has been working with government officials, namely those in the U.S. State Department, Department of Homeland Security, as well as some travel departments in the U.S. to try and allow European and U.K. Citizens to get to America for these races. Now, there's still a lot in the air. There's still a lot of questions over how this could be done. Right now, the U.S. has a travel ban from any of people that have been in those countries within the last 14 days. They're not allowed to go into the U.S. It includes the majority of the European Union, I think pretty much all countries, plus the U.K., Ireland, Iran and China. There's been some talk of Brazil potentially being added to that list and a couple other countries. There hasn't been any word on how long that'll last. There's been talks that the U.S. will likely keep its borders relatively controlled, at least through the rest of the year. That's where this poses a challenge, as nearly 40% of the IMSA WeatherTech paddock is affected one way or another by a driver, an engineer, support staff, technicians that are currently outside of the U.S. Mind you, a lot of foreign drivers do live here. You know, folks like Helio Castroneves, Juan Pablo Montoya, Pippo Durrani, for instance, typically lives in Miami, but he's actually in Brazil right now with family. But for the most part, you know, it does affect a good amount of drivers. You just got to look at the GTLM class in particular. The entire Porsche factory lineup does not have a single driver in the U.S. other than what you could say is Patrick Long, but he's not a full-time driver in that GTLM program. He hasn't driven the RSR, that version RSR at all. I know Porsche has been having some meetings to discuss some backup plans in case this doesn't work out, where IMSA can get their drivers in from other countries. It's a huge logistical nightmare, and I spent the better part of the weekend trying to figure out what can be done. Is there possibilities? The best thing I found was that there might be a loophole allowing drivers to perhaps visit an intermediary country on the way into the U.S. and spend 14 days there and then get into the U.S. that way, since they weren't in the U.K. or Europe during the last 14 days prior to their arrival into the U.S. But there's a lot of ifs there because, A, the U.S. can change their regulations any day. B, another country could change their regulations at any other day. So it's a mess, to be honest. And we're facing upwards of 20, 25 drivers that might not be able to race if the borders are completely locked down. Again, we don't have that confirmed. We don't know what's going to happen come July. But this has definitely been a hot topic with a lot of teams. And it's something we're going to be really keeping a close eye on in the coming weeks.
Well, doubling back to the calendar aspect of things, we talked about the changes relative to the WeatherTech Championship, but there have been some announcements regarding the various challenge series that race under the IMSA umbrella as well.
Yes, so IMSA revealed updated calendars for IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge, Prototype Challenge, Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge USA by Yokohama, as well as Lamborghini Super Trofeo. No major surprises with any of this, just some races being shuffled around. Super Trofeo, for instance, is now going to run on the streets of St. Petersburg, the rescheduled race in the end of October that was to be the season opener for, I think, the Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge by Yokohama. Super Trofeo was going to run in Toronto this year, but that event, I believe, has been postponed or canceled on the IndyCar side, but they've backed out of that race. Their season is going to start now, Super Trofeo, that is, at Road America on the NASCAR Xfinity weekend, which was previously detailed. Pilot Challenge retains a 10-round schedule. Their season will return at Sebring in July, that extra event that's been added. And then they basically mirror the rest of the WeatherTech Championship schedule. The other thing I do want to point out in terms of the WeatherTech schedule is that the rescheduled race at Watkins Glen currently falls on the same weekend as the Indianapolis 8-Hour Intercontinental GT Challenge / GT World Challenge America powered by AWS race. And that's caused a lot of friction right now, I think, between some teams, drivers, crew members that are involved in both series. And this is something we've talked about in previous shows on whether, you know, can the two major sports car series in America play along and be able to not fall on each other's weekends, especially when it comes down to the limited weekend availability we have when these races are rescheduled. And unfortunately, this looks to be the case right now. I think the Watkins Glen date seems pretty firm. Been hearing some whispers that there could be some accommodations made on the Indianapolis side. We're not too sure just yet. Let's wait and see. But if there could be a clash alleviated with this, I think it would be a very welcome decision for all involved, because there's quite a few drivers that are affected, and especially with both being endurance races, typically, you know, teams rely on third drivers for those kind of races, and it could be a problem where there's, you know, a huge demand for qualified GT3 drivers and the like, and also those fighting for the championship in GT World Challenge coming down to the wire and potentially having to choose one over the other. And I think that's going to be quite a difficult task.
Yeah, just another thing to keep an eye on as all of these schedules continue to shuffle around. And on that subject, moving over to Europe, we had some changes there, some more firm dates, I suppose, as well from the SRO side of things. What do we know that we didn't know before?
Yeah, so SRO in Europe has reduced their GT World Challenge Europe schedule from 10 rounds to 8. That's thanks to having a triple header for Sprint Cup at Barcelona and also Misano, the season opener. So it'll be 3 one-hour races there. Only 4 rounds of endurance this year. That's thanks to a 6-hour round at the Nürburgring. And then Paul Ricard remains a 6-hour 1,000-kilometer race as well, including plus the total 24 hours of Spa, which is 24 hours, or maybe 25. We're not entirely sure about that one just yet. But the season is now slated to open at Imola on July 25th and 26th. That's actually Spa 24 weekend, typically. That'll be a 3-hour Endurance Cup opener there, then followed by Misano, I think the week, there's a week in between, I believe, before Misano. So really clever for SRO to sort of rejiggle their calendar here into 8 weekends. I think it's going to be much more cost effective for teams. Also, the big news is that GT2 cars will be allowed inside GT World Challenge Europe Sprint. Basically, the GT Sports Club Europe has been absorbed into the Sprint Cup for this year. And that series was due to allow GT2 cars this season alongside GT3. So bronze rated drivers will be allowed to drive GT2 cars. That could be quite interesting to see how it all fares inside of a very highly competitive GT3 environment.
Yeah, really interesting there. And as far as getting back to racing is concerned, the SRO has detailed a pretty impressive, in terms of the depth to it, a plan for returning to the track, various stages to return to the track, first behind closed doors, with an eye on eventually opening things up. But really, the only details we have right now are about what they plan to do behind closed doors, and it's a pretty intensive policy.
Yeah, it's an 18-page document they supplied the teams on Monday morning, and what will be in for the time being is called Phase 1, which means no public access, no media access, no team PR representatives, very limited crew, lots of things done remotely, and basically keep groups of people in clusters, or what they would actually deem a cell. So you have SRO staff, sporting officials, technical TV, the ASN, the country-specific staff, SRO media staff, et cetera. They'd all be in their own little cells where they would not interact with other cells very frequently, if at all. And there's work being done right now to set up more messaging apps, more ways of getting cars through scrutineering with contactless options. It's a really interesting document that just covers a lot of different areas that I never really would have thought about, from hospitality to office cleaning to elevator usage, one person in the elevator at all time, maximum at all times. Logistics and support series and travel and accommodations. Like, for instance, they're suggesting travel by car should be favored, but only 2 people in a car, one in the front seat, one in the back seat. So here, gone are the days of teams transporting, you know, crews by these big vans, because that's going to increase the potential movement of contact, you know, of exposure. So little things like this, I'm really impressed by the folks at SRO for really taking their time, working out the options in terms of television. The idea is to have the commentators remotely, but one pit lane official wearing a full kit with protective gear, mask, visor, gloves. So it sounds like it'd be quite a kit there. Also, we've also gotten word that there wouldn't be a podium or any kind of victory celebrations. Drivers would go up to some kind of collection area to get their trophy and then have a chance to talk to the public with a microphone. So, and also a lot of safety built into the circuit with temperature checks on arrival, quarantine areas, medical zones. SRO's nominated a medical delegate for all of this. But perhaps the most interesting thing, just looking through these regulations, is the new pit stop procedure. During the driver change, there's going to be a mandatory disinfection of the cockpit. So when one driver gets out, there's going to be a crew guy with a bottle of cleaner cleaning the cockpit, cleaning the dashboard, cleaning the steering wheel, cleaning the seat before the next driver gets in. And that's something I never would have thought about given this whole pandemic, but it makes an absolute lot of sense. So every sport is adjusting accordingly. And as we saw NASCAR on Sunday return to racing in their obvious traditional single driver format, it never occurred to me that something like this would have to be done for endurance racing or multi-driver racing. So really hats off and kudos to SRO for coming up with this protocol. It's subject to change and other protocols from the government level, from the track level, from a national motorsport federation level supersedes anything that's in this document. But it's great to see that Stefan Rattel and his group has sort of put the outline there for their competitors, and I'm really hoping that other championships take notice of this and also have similar procedures in place when we do go back to racing, it's in the best and most safest environment as possible.
Yeah, really interesting, really in-depth. They seem to have thought of just about everything, which is quite impressive, like you say. So we'll see how that develops moving forward. And while we're on the European side of things, let's talk ACO for a moment, because as expected, we did get the news that the 6 hours of Spa WEC race, which has already had a date change, but now the announcement that it will be run behind closed doors, not a big surprise there.
Yeah, details to follow on that. I think WVC and ACO are still working up all of their safety protocols, but we had a video conference with Gerard Nouveau on Friday when this was kind of confirmed more or less, and he indicated that they're going to be taking a lot of precautions. Interestingly enough, he said it will be open to media, but very selected number of media, perhaps 20 or 30 people, instead of a typical, 300-400, I think that would show up for something like that. So interesting to see how different championships take different approaches on their return to racing, but let's wait and see for those regulations. Big thing is that, yeah, the race will be behind closed doors. The first two ELMS races are set to do the same as well, both at Paul Ricard and at Spa. That Spa ELMS race is scheduled the week before the WEC race. Still waiting on some further confirmations before officially giving the green light to these events. The biggest thing that Gerard said that needs to happen is for the European borders to open. Right now, most countries within the EU are still relatively closed off. It's supposed to be happening in the next month, we hear. So if that happens, that sort of opens the door there. Unfortunately, that might not make it so simple for people coming from Asia or America to assist these races, and we're going to have to wait and see how that works out. Every country is going to be different, and just like going back to our situation in IMSA with trying to get the foreign drivers in to the U.S., there's going to be challenges with some of the U.S. drivers and Asian drivers trying to get into Europe for Spa and the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So lots of complications, but good to see a WEC still moving forward with their races. you know, we'll have to wait and see on the 24 hours of how that'll all shake up. Gerard said that by early July, they should have a definitive answer on whether that'll go ahead as planned or not in September. But there's backup options for that, too, I think, well into the year. Different other dates that have been scoped out for the 24 hours of Le Mans should it need to be postponed even further.
And we will have a 24 Hours of Le Mans, at least virtual edition. The news of that has come to light. So sounds like there is some hope to see some endurance racing at Le Sarthe, although we're going to have to settle for the virtual kind here, at least in the short term.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to that. We'll have the virtual 24 Hours of Le Mans run over the actual planned weekend of Le Mans of June 13th and 14th. There's going to be a total of 50 entries, and apparently they have more than 40 already registered. GTE cars are in there, including Ferrari, Porsche, Aston Martin and Corvette, along with an Orica LMP2 car that can be used for prototypes for both LMP2 and LMP1 teams. We know that Toyota is going to be involved using a branded Orica LMP2 car with their drivers in the race. Real-life sim racers will be allowed, I think, a maximum of two per lineup, where there's a minimum of two real-life drivers in each lineup as well. So pretty exciting to see this all come together. It is on R Factor 2, which is a little different, because I'm not sure if a lot of the mainstream fans who aren't fully in-depth with sim racing know much about it, but it was a sim. It's a sim that's been very well-developed, a very independent, you sort of call it like an indie sim in a way, independent than that. There's been a lot of modifications made and a lot of different groups have come together to develop this with tracks and cars and whatnot over the years. I actually, back long before my days of being a journalist, I was sort of involved in some modding back then with R Factor, the original version of R Factor, which came from a precursor to Image Space Incorporated's F1 challenge game. But nonetheless, it's a good sim. It's a solid sim. Might not be just like iRacing that everybody's using these days or Ascendo Corsa Competizione, but should still put on a really good show for all involved. And looks like we're going to have a full TV package for this. Gerard Nouveau seems really upbeat on the prospects of this race.
Yeah, great. Excited to see that come to fruition. So that closes out the news of the week. You can find more information on those topics and more at sportscar365.com. Finally, though, listener questions that have come in the last week. The first one comes from Gregory Tolson, who says that he has a fear that Toyota or any other high-spending LMH program will try to exploit any weaknesses the LMDH class might have. He says currently Toyota is putting the non-hybrids in LMP1 to shame, which has directly caused attrition in the private sector of the class. What are both organizations, the WEC and IMSA, going to do to avoid a lopsidedness in racing between both classes? He says it just seems like the LMH will have the ability to throw a lot of money into a car to develop advantages while LMDH is much more controlled.
I think this would have been a bigger concern like a year ago, before this whole coronavirus situation. Toyota does have money, but I think that their budgets are going to be limited just because of what they have, what they're able to work with. And yeah, the LMH regulations are going to be much more open. And I think if you had a second manufacturer in LMH that went with a full-blown factory effort, that's where it might be a problem with a spending war. But if it's just Toyota, and if everything is going to be BOP'd, and we would have Glickenhaus and Baikalis potentially or most likely as well, I don't think we're going to see a spending war in this class. I really do believe that it'll be BOP'd, it'll be properly done. Toyota may have an advantage at some tracks over others because of their front-wheel driven hybrid system. You know, it might get back to the days of ALMS where you had LMP1 and LMP2 kind of put together in a single prototype class with BOP. I don't think it'll be to the extent of what DP and LMP2 was in the post-merger era of IMSA, but I think definitely, I wouldn't be too concerned about a potential spending war and Toyota sort of just lopsiding everybody else. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference between what is being proposed and what is active now in the WEC is the fact that this is going to be a BOP class, and that's not been the case in LMP1 previously. We've had equivalence of technology, which was similar but not exactly the same, and then this current success handicap system, which is very, very different. So I think there is a clear desire from the organizing groups to have an even playing field for both platforms. I expect between the two, we've seen both technical departments really take major strides recently in their BOP process. I think both will do a very good job. So I'm less concerned. I think any manufacturer that has more resources is going to have some kind of advantage, but that's just the nature of racing. Unless we go to spec racing, that's what we're going to have. And I think the platform that's been proposed and is about as good as we can get in terms of a safeguard to prevent a spending war, because I think there's going to be a limited return on the dollars spent if it truly is a BOP class, and then just to make sure that the playing field is relatively equal. I think we've got a proposed set of regulations that should be able to guarantee that, or at least come close. Let's move now to our final question. This one comes from Masked Cosmo, who wants to know, why are there no fans allowed at the July Florida races still? He says, first of all, it is July, still 7 more weeks after the day reading the story. He says, we know the threat of the virus, except for specific demographics of people based on age and health, has faded. Also, sports car races do not pack people into tight seating like sports such as basketball or even NASCAR does. He says that he hopes IMSA changes their minds on this and would think they have until some point in June to do so. And I think you hit the point right there, Mask Cosmo, with that last sentence. I think it's easier to say right now no fans, and maybe circumstances evolve to the point where they can open it up. I think that's a much better scenario than right now saying, yes, fans are welcome, only to say later, actually, no, you can't come. I think you're in a better position if you're IMSA to go the route that they're going and leave that option open potentially if enough boxes are checked to open up the event. What about you?
Yeah, I would agree. And even if fans are allowed, I think it's going to take some time before they are given the same access they had before, like getting in the garages and paddock and autograph sessions and everything. It's not going to be the same kind of fan experience you would get, you know, pre-coronavirus pandemic. So I think IMSA's playing the cautious role right now. They're following what NASCAR is doing, and obviously NASCAR is going to have a lot of races scheduled before IMSA goes back to racing, so I'm sure they're going to be keeping a close eye on that. The one race I would say to potentially keep an eye on for the potential return of fans would be Road America in August. That's a massive facility. There are ways to potentially have social distancing trackside. Speaking to John Doonan before, he's referenced three different scenarios for fans, like, as in a closed event, a full fan event, or a fan light event. And I think Road America would be a good candidate for a potential fan light, where they would be maybe restricted to some areas, camping around side the track, or maybe other options, but potentially not maybe allowed in the paddock, but still being able to enjoy the race from out in the open. We have to hope that that's something we can build towards by the end of the year. It wouldn't be fun to have all these races behind closed doors, that's for sure.
No, that's not the ideal situation, but I think everyone in charge has to take this very seriously, and to this point they have, so I have to commend them for that. Thank you very much for writing in, both Gregory and Masked Cosmo. Great to have you as part of the show, and if anyone else, or the two of them as well, listening, have questions for a future show, you can leave it in the comment section or use the hashtag AskDoubleStint on Twitter, and we'll get to it next week, and that's when we'll talk to you next. Thanks for tuning in. We love a rating and a review. Talk to you next week with our next edition of Double Stint.